My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to another episode. It is Friday, and this is me speaking to you all. Fun episode on the books for you all after the break. We have returning guest, Idolism Jay. Jay is a fellow Goomba, and we are having a good time kind of catching up and chatting here. We definitely will have him on future episodes for sure, but here we got to do one of my favorite questions. But what is a least favorite game in one of your favorite gaming franchises? So this always digs up some personal opinions and some personal feelings. And I always like that it's still a game people like enjoy and would play. But, you know, like being able to dig into what are those flaws or what are those opportunities that we find personally that turn us off a little bit from the rest of the games in the series. But, yeah, that is after the break. So have some fun listening to that one. And we definitely look for Jay on future episodes for sure. Always good chatting with him. What else? Business, same business as usual. pixelsandpolygons.net. It's my website. You can buy stuff like 32-bit library volumes 1 through 4, or even the deluxe editions. Deluxe edition volume 4 is my biggest and best book for sure. It is up on the site to order and ship directly to you. I've also got Retro Game Zine. Issues 1 through 4 are all up on pixelsandpolygons.net to order now and physically ship to you. If physical is not your thing and you want digital, patreon.com/Darren Hupke. You can go to the shop there and you can buy PDFs of all the 32-bit library books. They're $5 a pop. And the Retro Game Zines, those are like $3. So not too much to maybe like try one of them out if you're curious and want to see what that's kind of about. And if you do enjoy it, you can always come back and double dip and get the physical edition of it. The Patreon also has some free articles and free writing that I do that is not meant to be a paid thing. So you can follow along for free and read some of my inconsistent writings there. It's just inconsistent at the moment just because I am actually working on the next 32-bit library book. So my writing time is going into actually writing those things and the Retro Game Zine. So, but when I have like one-off articles and things that I want to kind of talk about and share, I post those there. So, if you do want to support, you do like what I am doing, you want to find a way to help me out and be a pal, there is a paid tier you can join. What that does is it gets you early access to this show, Pixels and Polygons, so you get a week in advance. So it's just a way to kind of hear the newest episode sooner. But you also get digital copies of Retro Game Zine every month for free. And then you get a postcard once a month mailed to you, which is a giant screenshot with a single review written in the backside of it. It's the world's smallest video game magazine, and you can get that every month for like that $5 a month. That supports me, pays for things like web hosting and all that stuff that I've got going on to produce all the stuff that I do. But that's it. I say this every week. I should like pre-record this and make it simple, but I'm literally saying this every week, every time, and that's what you got to do when you're a entrepreneur in video game nostalgia and written formats of a video game and electronic medium. But yeah, that's what I do. That's it. That's all I got for you. We'll catch you next week with another new fun episode and see you, I guess in 7 days. Enjoy the episode. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical content. podcast. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It is my conversational podcast about video games. I have a returning guest. We've got Idolism J back on the show. We last caught up and we last talked about competitive games in the previous episode. This week, we're going to talk about our least favorite games, or one of our least favorite games and one of our favorite series. I think that's how I phrased the question. I should have had it in front of me, but yeah. But welcome back on the show, Jay. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you so much for having me back on.
No problem. I'm going to just address it. We are recording this back to back after the other episode, just in case I reference something as if it's just happened, because it has just happened to us, but they'll be released weeks apart. And so people might hear you later on, but yeah, it is what it is. That's how the recording works. How do you feel about jumping into it and getting a couple of this or that's thrown your way?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right. Let's go cartridge or CD.
Oh, CD. One second. Oh, God. I guess I have to say CD because they're just better, but CD. I guess I'll say CD, but like there's a love for cartridges, but like CDs are better or have been better for a long time. We talked about last episode. I was an N64 kid who also loved the PlayStation, and it's just like, oh, okay, I like carts, but man, those CD-ROMs.
Yeah, I have one of the is that Polymega, that system, that little like kind of set top all in one type of thing.
Yeah.
And ripping CDs to that drive, which is a cool thing about it. It's like an iTunes for video games. You kind of put in your games, it copies it to its internal drive, and you can boot from there. Importing a CD, you know, it takes me, you know, 10 to 20 minutes or so, depending on how much data is on the disc. But I also have the Nintendo 64 Element module. And when you pop a cartridge in, you don't even realize it, but it's just ripped like essentially in seconds. Like it's the amount of memory, because it's just, you know, 8, 16, you know, maybe like the biggest games are like the 256 or 512, but still, like, not a lot of games use up a lot of that space for cartridges. And they're on there quick and fast. Like, you can rip the entire 64 library before you're even done with like Final Fantasy 7.
Yeah, it's just stupendous. Not only the amount of information that could be put on the CD-ROMs in that era, but also the amount of game you could compress down onto an N64 cart.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Resident Evil 2 port.
I don't know how they did it. To this day, there was many years of my life where I'm like, did I hallucinate that there was Resident Evil 2 on the N64? That just doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, there was for my 32-bit library books, the Capcom volume, doing like the research and all stuff for it, like come across it. But for Resident Evil 2, the game could have been on a single CD for like both characters and everything. But there was some type of like late development bug they found. And like, it may have something to do with like the scenario system they had with like, you know, post game and like looping back around. But instead of fixing it, they just released the double discs. Like, they just put the same data on like both discs essentially, so that it would avoid like whatever bug this was. So when I learned that, it made a little bit more sense. Like, it still is magic that it got compressed onto a Nintendo 64 cartridge, but it's not like it truly was two full CDs of content compressed down. It was just better managed data, you know, compressed down onto the cartridge.
That makes more sense that way, but it's still wild.
All right. Day one edition or director's cut / game of the year edition?
Ooh. I guess I'm going to go director's cut game of the year edition, just purely because the era where day one editions are a thing oftentimes I'm not playing that game day one, and even in some cases I wouldn't want to play that game day one. It needs a couple of patches before it's working properly.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking, you know, No Man's Sky day one edition or No Man's Sky today.
My first thought was like, yeah, do I want to play the version of Bloodborne that like puts you to sleep every time there's a loading screen?
First person or third person?
I'll go first person. I've always just felt more attached to first person games. And I guess if I had to like list off some cool third person ones, I don't know if I would have something off the top of my head the way that I'm like Half-Life, Halo, you know, things like that.
Okay. Last one, Ryu or Ken?
Ooh, Ryu, because the times that they've made Ryu interesting are really cool. Whereas Ken is usually the cooler character, but like when you get a really sick version of Ryu, he's awesome. But like you can usually set your watch to Ken being the cooler one. So I actually do like Ryu more, because when Ryu's cool, like a good Street Fighter is a game where Ryu's the cool one. Or I should say, a good Street Fighter is when Ryu is cool, because Ken is almost always going to be cool, but like there's some games where there's really, really cool versions of Ryu, and I'm like, hell yeah, that's what's going on.
All right, well, that is it. We got through the this or that's. We are warmed up now. Let's get into the icebreaker. This is another newer question, but let's have some fun with it. Let's see if anything comes to mind. But what game did you wrongly judge by its cover or title? Do you have a game that maybe you mistook?
I'm gonna step away from the mic real quickly and run over to my gaming shelf and see if there's anything that sparks that.
Okay.
Real quick, because I'm drawing a blank. All right, I do have the answer. I have actually a very good answer. Legaia 2 for the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
The sequel to Legend of Legaia.
The fresh games, yellow the branding.
That does not help it. It is not a particularly great looking PS2 game. It's kind of an earlier PS2 game. If you don't remember it, that's because it came out after Final Fantasy X, and so it might as well have just been deleted off the face of the earth. but I was out sick last year, and I've had this game for a couple years now because I saw it at a game store and I was like, what are you talking about? They made a sequel to Legaia? I liked Legend of Legaia a lot, and I never even realized there was a sequel. So I bought it and see it sat on my shelf, as many games do, for a couple years, and I played it last year, and I think that game is straight up better than Legend of Legaia 1. Does not look as good. It does not look anywhere near as good, and the voice acting is not great, but at its heart, the mechanics are so stinking good, and a bit of an improvement on Legaia 1.
I've always wanted to try that out, and because I loved the first one as well, but then when like Sony passed on publishing it and then didn't think it was going to come out, but then it still did come out, and it was like that fresh games. They also did like Mr. Mosquito and something else.
Mad Maestro. Maestro.
Yeah.
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 Did they do Mr. Mosquito? I
thought they did.
I think you might be thinking of Mad Maestro, because I think I have the Mr. Mosquito box. One second. I'm going to check that real quick again.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought that was one of them too. Oh yeah, it was fresh games.
You were correct. It's just like I just bonked my mic, I'm pretty sure. You were correct. It's just like the rest of that cover is yellow. So yeah. It never stuck out the same way that all the rest of those fresh game ones were. Also, I recently alphabetized my gaming collection, so it was real easy for me to be like PS2 M, found it.
Yeah, these box arts are in my brain. Like I don't even have a copy of either of these games, but like I too, it's almost like they have like the in-game character model just like like slightly touched up, and he's just in a dramatic pose, but like no other flair or no other like art or design or charm to it at
really,
all.
Really, really not a good cover. The more you look at it, the more it's like, we took 3 in-game assets and put the logo over it, and then put the fresh games border around everything.
Those are that's a good, those are good answers. But yeah, LaGaia, I've always wanted to play that second one, and also I feel like it's interesting that it makes sense that you would enjoy that as well. That fighting system, or the battle system, having the choice of kind of making your little string of combos and everything that would have special moves and everything. I always thought that was rad. It's a cool take on the RPG.
Many a fighting game person shares a bit of love for the LaGaia, because it's like, oh yeah, it's like a fighting game JRPG mechanic, you know. We all kind of, it's the same way like a lot of fighting game people love Sabin from Final Fantasy VI, because you do you know special move inputs for his skills, and you know, everyone's like, yeah, I can throw Hadoukens in my Final Fantasy.
Yeah, that's another good one too. Yeah, well, we made it through it then. Here we are in the moment for the main topic. The question we're going to ask today is, what is one of your least favorite games and one of your favorite franchises? And we'll obviously discuss why that is. But do you have one on the top of your mind here to answer the question?
Yeah, so I have a called shot one that I think is going to be, I'm just going to mention it real quick. I haven't played all the Final Fantasy games yet. You know, I've played like 1 through 7 and 10 and a couple spinoffs. But I think Final Fantasy 3 might just actually be bad. I played the Pixel Remaster, and the more time I've had away from that game, I think it's actually just bad. But I still want to play the DS version and the original Famicom version before I solidify that opinion. But it's right now scaling towards less that even I don't like it, and more that I think this game might actually just be bad.
Oh, wow.
But we're gonna let that one percolate until I play all the versions of 3, in case like there's a version that I think makes that game good, and then I will walk this one back. But the actual answer is I really do not like Street Fighter 4.
Interesting. Street Fighter 4, and like, for being away from Street Fighter for so long, like, it was, you know, it almost gets so much credit for that resurgence in revisiting and reviving, you know, the franchise for Capcom that they, you know, were letting just kind of diminish and die away, you know, post, you know, 3 and like the things they did in between years. So I think a lot of people probably have a lot of nostalgia and fun for what that was for the series, but you have that as one of your least favorites. Yeah. The follow-up question then on that is why about that for you?
I was on the Start and Select podcast, where I dropped, you know, that I dislike Street Fighter 4, among a lot of games I dislike, because when you play some games competitively, like the bad sides of them come out more often. Like, Street Fighter 4 is a game that should deserve all the credit for pretty much revitalizing fighting games in general. Like, it kickstarted a massive boom period within fighting games that kind of hasn't gone away, in a sense. You know, it's been all uphill since Street Fighter 4, and I played Street Fighter 4 competitively for four odd-ish years. I played from vanilla to super to arcade edition 2012, I mean, and then I think I dropped off like pretty much right where Ultra, the final revision, happened. And for as much as Street Fighter 4 deserves all of its laurels for what it did, the actual core experience of playing that game competitively, I think I'd rather go kick rocks. I hate that game the way it plays at like a, you know, competitive level.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the biggest kind of things that grate at you, like, from that experience? Like, what are the things that maybe like bug you the most in your time with it?
There's a couple things. There's like the intentional problems I have with it, and then there's like the unintentional problems I have with it. Like, it's one thing to say, oh, AE was not a good balanced version. We know that. We know that Arcade Edition almost kind of purposefully was a poorly balanced version. They introduced Yun to the game, and they like very purposefully made him the best character by a wide margin. It was just kind of embarrassing to see everything that character could do. It's also, you know, I could say the same thing for like vanilla. Like, of course, Sagat does 80 bajillion damage every time he looks at you. But there are some choices in mechanics that game made that I never jived with. The focus attack system took many revisions for to become something that the cast could more uniformly use, the way you could like wake up DP and then focus attack dash cancel and then get a follow up. Well, there were many characters that had a DP, but they couldn't focus attack dash cancel it. And it wasn't until like the final version where like anyone that had any sort of DP or reversal ish type thing, then they could do it. It took them many versions of the game to like dole out that mechanic equally. Another big issue I had was I didn't like the fact that there was like a three frame reversal window, but the game more or less required so many of your combos to be very tight one frame links. It felt very it did not feel like it was weighted equally. Like you could do reversal on defense with a much wider window than you could do just your basic combos. And then finally, I think one of the big ones I had was, this is something that even today we'll just I'll bring this up and everyone's like, man, yeah, what the fuck were they thinking? How do I explain this? There are ways to chain attacks in that game and there are ways to link attacks in that game. And that's two different styles of how a combo works. Like a chain is something that you like press jab into a jab and you cancel out at the end of the jab into the second jab. A link is where that first jab actually completes entirely, and using the hit stun of that first jab, you have enough time to precisely time the second jab. And there are combos in Street Fighter 4, in the Street Fighter 4 like tutorial combo section, that will require you to link some of these buttons instead of chaining the buttons. But you can chain them. It just will never tell you, hey, this combo only works if you're linking them. It was just like a lot of people have this like shared trauma of like, what the fuck are these combos trying to tell me to do? Because you can chain these combos, but it won't actually end the combo because you have to link them to get the specific cancel state that allows you to finish the last move part of the combo. So it's very dusty in that sense. The big problem I actually have with the game is like there was a thing that was I almost want to say invented during Super Onward. It does not apparently showcase in vanilla, but there is an issue with the game where they're called unblockables, but they're also called hard to blockables. Basically, when you knock down someone in Street Fighter 4, you can do a canned series of inputs, be that dashes or, you know, frame kills off of your certain moves. And then you jump at them while they're waking up from their knockdown and you do an aerial attack pretty much right over their head. And it happens to be a case where it will be an attack that you need to block left for one frame and then block right the very next frame. This is extremely hard to do. So these are called like, these are called unblockables. They are technically blockable, but they are so hard to do. And worse than that, they are very innocuous looking. So there is a tendency for people to not even realize that like during gameplay, someone wasn't just like getting the wrong guess. They were actually just being unblockable. So there's a clip from a big time fighting game guy named Sejam, where he's talking about Street Fighter 4 and he goes, yeah, I think Street Fighter 4 was a game where people were cheering for unblockables and they didn't even know it because it was so prevalent. But people were not, unless you were taught about what was going on, people had no idea that like, hey, this is a setup that like it's like a one frame block to get out of this if you don't know it.
Wow, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. So the way I explained it to Kiefer on the Start and Select podcast is, Street Fighter 4 is a really fun game if you know like 0% to 74% of what's going on, like in a competitive level. And then once you break past the 75% of knowledge, then that game gets just fucking aggravating to play.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I did spend a lot of time with that. Like that was one of those ones that like I loved like Street Fighter growing up, again, just playing it like, you know, against my brother in arcades, before we saw a movie. Or I did have like, and I love like to death Street Fighter Alpha 3 on PlayStation because, you know, me just by myself playing like the world tour mode and having like, you know, just hours and hours of a challenge, you know, all for myself, and not necessarily like in the competitive scene per se, but just a lot of love for the Street Fighter series and all stuff. So having it like kind of disappear like it did and then come back with 4, like, I was working at a game store at that time, and so it was just kind of cool to kind of see it come back and come back as popular as it was. I always loved the art style to it, like on paper, like all of like the early footage of it and like showing like, you know, the really over exaggerated, like, you know, like painter strokes and things like that. But I feel like once that pivoted from 4 to 5, like it lost some of that, like that painterly style, and they just looked more like shiny action figures. And so like I almost more preferred the visual style of 4, but the gameplay of like later ones. But they all have their charm. But yeah.
Yeah, 5 kind of expands on that like calligraphy brush look, but they become like colored blobules that have the same thing. Like, this would have been really easy to come on here and been like, ah, the least favorite Street Fighter game is 5, because that game like came out, when that game came out, it was just like unilaterally shit on. It was just, it was actually just a very, very bad game for a while. But I have it on good authority that like by the end of Street Fighter 5's life, that became a quite a good game. It just, you know, looks like a mess because it doesn't look very good. But I kind of see it tussle back and forth with which game I don't like the way it looks more, because 5 has like a lot of really wacky animation problems where nothing looks like it's keyed or flows well. Everything's very stuttery in their animations. But the art style to 4, I think, is like horrific. There's this weird like muscle fetishist look to 4 where every person needs to have a pair of abs. Even Dhalsim, even E Honda, and E Honda's like gigantic plate abs are on the wrong side of his belly fat because anatomy doesn't work that way. And my favorite thing from like my favorite ugly piece of Street Fighter 4 art is, I call him pectoral separation Ryu. There's like a picture of Ryu looking directly at the camera, kind of pulling his gi apart, and his pectoral muscles are drawn with such like sinewy texture to it that it looks like there's a pit in his chest where he tore his pec and then it rehealed.
That's funny. I mean, yeah, it was going from all like from 2 to Alpha to 3, like it definitely felt like each generation, you know, or each, you know, core title was going to have its own visual identity. So 4 definitely, like, you know, really wanted to stand out, and yeah, they were really big buff dudes and muscles on muscles for sure. Kind of given all the characters just kind of like a giant size to them. But I think they were just using more of the real estate because now we were in widescreen. Now we were in playing on larger monitors and things. So we had more room for the characters to get kind of beefy. You know, they were able to grow into that resolution that we had, you know, gifted to us.
There was initially a thought when they started to do work on 4 that they were like, what do we do with the hitboxes? Do we make them like accurate to the 3D models now that we have 3D models? So there probably could have been like a chance where they're like, well, we'll make everyone kind of big and buff, that way we can have, you know, bigger buffer 3D models that will represent our hitboxes. But then they very wisely decided to not go down that route and went with standard hit and hurt boxes, because that would have been an awful game if it went with like 3D model specific hurt boxes.
Yeah, just collision based.
It would not have been good. It would not have been good at all.
Well, that's interesting to hear. Yeah, you brought up Final Fantasy, which I think is kind of interesting. I think I still, like, to this day will say for my sake, like 13 is just where like I fell off the series. And I don't want to say it like because the game got bad or anything, but I think the game or the franchise just evolved in a different direction than I was hoping or wanting it to maybe go myself. I think maybe like things started turning with 12, I think 13 is where it definitely just kind of went out off and on its own. And when you brought that up, I just started thinking about it myself, like, you know, which game would have done it for me. And I might have a different answer on different days of the week as well. But like, I've recently listened to a couple other podcasts, where actually they were like talking about like revisiting 13 and praising it for, like, you know, while it did lack a lot of exploration and a lot of like open world like feel to it, that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't a bad game. You know, it may not be the Final Fantasy you expect it out of it, but it doesn't make it a bad game. And some of like the battle mechanics and things, you know, if you sink some time into it, we'd actually, you know, find like a great system there and everything. But I just remember in that era, it was around the same Street Fighter 4 era as well. You know, Final Fantasy 13 came out not much longer from that. And I wanted it to be everything that it wasn't. And so I kind of fell off that one, hard, unfortunately. And then it got kind of, dicey from there, cause they had ideas for the 13 series to be a spinoff you know, seven something different titles. And, you know, one of which was spun out and ended up becoming Final Fantasy 15 itself, and, threw another MMO in the mix. Which I did enjoy a little bit. I mean, I was a day one player and saw it not get received properly by a fan base and then go offline for a significant number of months and then come back as a Realm Reborn and everything. But clearly it was able to pull a 180 and find some large success there. But that was all in the middle of Final Fantasy, trying to figure out what makes Final Fantasy Final Fantasy. And yeah, I still don't know that it is, you know. I think that they now just reinvent themselves with every iteration, and if that's their thing, like, that's fine. Like, I actually did quite enjoy, you know, Final Fantasy 16 for the most part. It just seems like a weird business model to absolutely like scrap and remove everything and not iterate on your games, and instead just like 100% AAA ground up for, you know, every new game going forward. It just does not seem like it's going to be a lasting thing to do, but I'm not Square Enix and I don't have their bank accounts, so I don't make that decision for them.
Yeah, kids these days don't realize just how dire it was back then when it's like 13 came out and Mixed would be putting it nicely, and then 14 came out and it like died before being born again, and all the while everyone in the background was like, hey, when's that Final Fantasy 7 remake, and also is Versus 13 still happening, or are we all just hallucinating? It's like those were the bad days. Yeah. But 13 itself I am very interested to get to, because I feel like I'm either gonna love or hate that game. It's gonna either be something that I jam with or I super do not jam with, and that's why Final Fantasy 3 is my answer to that so far, is because I think, like, it's not that I don't like 13, it's not that I don't like 3 as much as I think 3 might actually just not be good. Like, I think there's just like a lot of structural problems with 3 that make it not a good game.
Yeah, that's obviously important to define, because yeah, I mean, like, being a least favorite game and one of your favorite franchises, like, I think there's still like valid things and valid points to love about 13 and everything. It just, you know, didn't quite have everything, you know, I needed, not needed, but wanted of it in that moment and everything. But yeah, the thing that actually I heard that makes me want to kind of personally revisit it and try it out again was that while you may be the player in the battle system of the other Final Fantasies up to that point, you're more of the coach in the battle system of 13, because you don't control your AI companions and you dictate these like paradigms, which is essentially like, you know, defined job behaviors, and you kind of like just dictate and coach out to the game like how your player should respond in battle. And then that's when they kind of introduce like the stagger mechanic that has been quite around for now a little while, but even in Final Fantasy Rebirth or Final Fantasy 16, like, there was this, you know, build up to the stagger and, you know, then delivering like the hits there after you kind of figure out the flow of it. So I think there's a justification and a reason to revisit it and maybe redefine what you think it is. But like, yeah, I think the first few hours of it feeling like this hallway simulator is a bit of a misjudgment, but it is still like one that is like lingers in the back of my mind for that franchise for me. So we answered the question and we've come to the end of it. Any final thoughts you have about anything we've talked about today, Jay?
Street Fighter 4 sucks.
Street Fighter 4 sucks. You heard it here. This was not the hot take episode. This is just facts. Jay shooting facts out there at the fan base. So yeah, there you go.
Truth bombs. And
that's fun. All right. Well, I will again share links and everything, like the YouTube channel and social medias and whatnot, in the show notes.
Thank you.
But I appreciate you joining the show. You have my list of questions. I'm sure we'll have you on in the future for more podcasting fun. Cool.
Okay, thank you so much. I'd be honored to be back on.
Right on. Well, you have a great rest of your night, and I'll catch y'all, everybody, next week.